20 to 10 on 91.7 ABC Coast FM. Big Whiskey and the Groo Grux King was the name of the album back in 2009. If you are at school at the moment, you will have six distinct careers, 14 jobs, and you'll probably live over the age of 100. That's not my view, and I didn't just pluck those figures from nowhere. They are actually the views of a futurist, a business futurist, who is here on the Gold Coast at the moment. I'd like to introduce you to Morris Mizalowski, who's here for a number of conferences. Hey, Morris, how are you?
I am very, very good, and good to be here in person, finally.
Yes, I know. We've spoken a couple of times on the phone, so it is strange, although I had a heads up because I checked you out online.
Ah.
Yeah, so I knew what was coming into the studio. You may be still processing what you're seeing in the studio.
No, absolutely not. I'm thankful you let me in then.
Futurist. How does one become one of those?
There are a number of ways to go about it. There actually is a formal qualification around it, and it's called the Bachelor of Foresight. You can actually do a master's and a doctorate and even a professorship in it if you want. There are a few universities that offer it in Australia and in the States, as everything in the States.
A PhD in foresight.
Yes. Not because I do it, but it actually is quite a discipline in the way you go about trying to foresee or trying to hypothesize on what tomorrow might look like. It's quite a structural program. Having said that, I do none of that. I really come at it from the other angle. My life has been as a business strategist for the last 31 years. So for me, it's always been an angle of trying to understand what tomorrow looks like so I can better inform my audiences and my clients into the decisions they need to make. And one of my basic mantras is quite simple. It is that we need to listen to yesterday, but we need to speak to tomorrow.
So it's quite a research-based thing that you do?
It absolutely is as a foundation piece. So the foundation of what I do is an understanding of the industry, the business, whatever it is that we're looking forward into. A lot of it is done by what's called secondary research, which is reading through the literature and reading through what's being done. Occasionally we throw into that the primary research, which means we go out and find the information where we can, and that really depends on the budget. And then based on that understanding, because at that point you really have an historical document, you have people's thinking backwards, you've then got to push that forward and ask yourself the questions around how will this be relevant into tomorrow, into the space that we're going to head into, whether it's 5, 10, 15, 20, 30 years from then. And it's not a matter of predicting. It really is a matter of hypothesizing. You know, I don't sell tax tickets. I can't figure out who's going to win the horse race. It's none of that. It's really a matter of understanding human nature, understanding the way the planet has evolved, and extrapolating from those things forward.
And technology is a huge part of that.
Oh, technology is an incredible part of it. When I started my career, technology was really a pen and paper. I mean, that's what technology was. And we've come, obviously, as we now know, into a computer age for the last 30 years. But I truly believe when we go forward in history and look back, our children, our grandchildren, will ask us where we were when computers were invented. The same way we ask people now, where were they when the planes first took off? We live through it. We're that proverbial frog in boiling water. We don't realise how far we've come in 30 years. It is extraordinary the way that we have evolved the world. And
it is funny, you know, I was watching on, I think it was ABC One on the weekend, Throw Mum Up from the Train.
Yes.
I've never seen the film. It's an old, well, it's not old, but Billy Crystal's in it and Danny DeVito. And the first thing my partner and I said, we went, wow, there are no mobiles. There are no mobiles in the film. They've all got that old-fashioned phone and, you know, they're calling each other from phone booths. And I thought, oh, my gosh, this film, it's not new, but it hasn't been out that long, but obviously it has. You know,
and when was the last time any of us even could find a phone booth?
Good point. You know, sometimes near corner stores, in strange places, you see that obligatory phone booth, and usually young people there with their bikes. I occasionally see that, but it's very rare. I'm very keen to talk to you very much, Morris, about education and tourism. Mm. Firstly, tourism is so important to the Gold Coast, but also education. We're trying to build ourselves here on the Gold Coast as a knowledge precinct. Mm. But before we do that, you've just told me that on the weekend, you were attending or speaking at a conference to do with the future of funerals. Obviously, there's always going to be people who need a funeral, but where are we heading?
So it really is the funeral industry rather than funerals themselves. As we know, funerals are not going to disappear as much as we would like them to. And even if we would like them to, that's an interesting debate of how we would, in fact, feed and house a population that never died, because there is work being done now around longevity and the thought process that we will live to 150, 200 years, not too far from now. But anyway, I digress. Back to funerals. We're talking about the notion of how it is obviously a very physical process, but really very little thought is given to the digital side of that. And we're not talking about the physical occurrence, we're talking about really the memorialization and the ceremony around the bereaved person and the family. Much of what happens nowadays actually happens online. It happens around the notion of people contacting each other, leaving online memorials in Facebook or other places. There's a specialist address for that called Heaven Address, which is just for memorialization. It's the notion of families coming online to find when the service is, where it is, how to get there. And also the ongoing thought process of how do we remember that deceased, that loved one. Historically, as a society, we were taught really it wasn't that we were taught not to remember, but we were taught not to talk much about the deceased once they passed on, and really only to do it on memorial days. Our culture's changing, and has changed over the last 10 or 15 years, where we now are ready for an ongoing conversation. Once the person's passed on and we go through that heavy emotion, we then want to reminisce. We want to be able to talk. We want to be able to see.
And social media is the perfect.
Is perfect. For that. Absolutely. And the whole notion of social media being available after we pass on. Now, if somebody answers your social media, you've really got to worry. So I don't think the other person's going to be able to come back and answer our tweets or our Facebook. But it's more the notion of the people that are left behind to carry on that conversation, to carry on the memory of the person. And there are all sorts of interesting things going on around the background too. There's an app which is American-based but does work in Australia. It's called Billion Graves, if anyone wants to look it up. I don't know why you would.
Billion Graves.
Billion Graves. All right. What it lets you do is, using what's called geolocation, which is the ability for your mobile phone to know where you are, when you're in a grave site, so when you're in a cemetery, for instance, if you haven't been for a while, it's often difficult to find your loved one in that. It'll actually find that person for you. What it's able to do is it locates the grave. Again, the family has to have agreed to this. This is all opt-in. So the family's agreed to it. The family's actually put the coordinates in and decided what information will be available. You can drill down from that app to be able to find the grave itself. It'll guide you to it. And this is the part that for most people is a step too far, is that on your mobile phone you can then have interaction. Again, not with the dead person, because if he or she answers, you've got to worry.
Yeah.
But this is more about remembering them. So maybe it's the ceremony. Maybe it was part of the video that was put together, the montage of photos, the good wishes people left behind. If you want, you can read that in perpetuity as you go to the grave and interact with the family that way.
Wow.
So it's not morbid when you put it into the context of what the whole thing is about giving respect to the person that you're visiting and really having a deep understanding of who they are. Because we know that after a couple of years, 10, 15 years, there's less remembered about that person. The next generation knows very little about them. The second and third generation would likely most probably not even go. So this is a way to continue that digital memory of the person. So not necessarily more, but if you put it in the right context of what its purpose is, again, all opt-in, all known to the family, there's nothing untoward about it. It's just a way to extend the loved one's digital life as long as we can.
Maurice Mizalaski, talking funerals, or rather the funeral industry and where the digital age fits into all of that, you're with Nicole Dyer. It's 11 to 10 on 91.7 at ABC Coast FM. Maurice is a business futurist. So let's talk about education.
Yeah, education is just so, so important. I think our education system, what I know, is in a state of upheaval at the moment. What we have are a lot of people my age, baby boomer age, who are reminiscing about what education was in the past, who are literally back in the days of the 3 R's, and there's nothing wrong with the 3 R's. This is being respectful to them. Again, listening to the past, speaking to the future. But what we need to understand, as you said in the opening, is that our students today are living in a totally different world from anything we could even imagine, let alone saw. They've never known a time when computers didn't exist. They've never known no SMS. For them, the world is flat, literally. They have a digital access to information 24/7 from anywhere on the planet. They will have 6 careers. They will have 14 jobs. They will live in a world that we, even today, can't imagine. They'll be doing things in 10 years that we today can't label.
But will they be able to write?
Well, the question is, do they need to write? And that's what we talk about. So again, I'm not answering the question. I'm being provocative in the way we answer it, which is what we need to do in this discussion. We need to be provocative about what are the skill sets our children will need of tomorrow. I, for instance, talk about 3 C's. I talk, again, 3 R's must be there. But 3 C's include communicating, because our children of tomorrow will be communicating in different ways than we ever did. I mean, we obviously spoke and we talked to people, but we talk to people often in a set geographical boundary of our office, of the environment we worked in. these people will be talking to people across the planet. They'll be talking in different languages, and there are apps that allow you to translate. We talk about collaboration, because the likelihood is that we will be working in teams, or tribes as I call them, into the workforce of tomorrow. And we also talk about creative problem solving, because you cannot teach somebody a career anymore. When I finished my school, it was expected I would do a qualification. That qualification, with a little bit of tweaking, would see me through 40 years, and I would then finish and go into retirement. We've already said that's not going to be the case anymore. So our students of today need to know, if these are the basic parameters, if these are the tools I have to work with, how can I make best use of them to achieve what my outcomes?
Food for thought, definitely. Now, on the subject of tourism, Maurice, for someone who is a tourism operator here on the coast, how is technology going to impact on their business in the years to come?
One of the big things that I'm seeing at the moment is what I call hyper-personalisation, which is the notion that people no longer want to go, or aren't as likely to want to go, on the big broad tour. I talk about it in my days being the Women's Weekly Tour, where we went for 3 weeks, we got on and off a bus. What we're finding now increasingly is that people want to provide their own program. They have so much access to information, not just from a brochure or an online, but from other people that have been, that they now want to be able to say, I want to specifically go to the Tambourine Mountains, I want to specifically go to SeaWorld, I want to specifically go here. And that doesn't fit an itinerary out of a brochure. So we're going to see more of this hyper-personalization.
In the form of
people will put together their program, they will do it through their device, through their mobile device, and then it will be up to the operators to come and go out of what I call a co-created space. In other words, working together collaboratively to help people to achieve those tourism aims. So whereas before we might have felt insular or isolated, in other words, we provided that particular attraction, and yes, we had logistics, we had buses and things coming into it, we often didn't collaborate or cooperate fully with other tourism providers. We met them, we knew them, we certainly weren't, there was no animosity, but we didn't work very heavily with them. In the future, I think we're going to have to seamlessly connect one to the other, because in the tourist's eyes, that's how they see the world.
And one thing that's happening now is I will very rarely stay in a hotel if I can't jump online and see pictures of that hotel. Mm. And so that's not uncommon. A lot of hotel chains are using that at the moment. How will that evolve?
That's gone,
become more impersonal.
Yes, and that's become a growth area of incredible means. I mean, we all use programs like that now, or websites like that now, that give us an insight beyond just the star rating. Because only 5 years ago, most people were still using a star rating to be able to figure out the hotel. Now most people bypass that, go online and figure out what the last 20 people thought about
yes.
the accommodation.
Yep.
I'm finding still a lot of my tourism providers are having trouble coming to terms with that, because there is some negativity in those comments. Some, though I think we dwell too much on that 2 or 3%. It's, most comments are actually very, very good. We need to be in the space and listening, which is one of the arguments I have very often with my tourism providers, is they would rather shut their ears, and this is a tough thing to say, but it is true, they would rather shut their ears and hope it goes away, rather than actually be in the fray, listening to what people are saying about their accommodation or their tourism, and then, if needed, amending it possibly, and if not, what I find most interesting is that they often don't need to comment to say that you're wrong, because the community that have been there will say, that's wrong. I was there last week, this isn't the experience I had.
So it balances out.
It absolutely does. So there's a lot of online work that our tourism providers, I think, need to be doing. They need to look at their product as well, and they also need to look at the future of the people that are coming to see them. We're talking about baby boomers who will be out of the workforce by the end of this decade. They will be working part-time consulting maybe, but certainly with a view to getting on the road, to seeing the world. And they will see the world in a way that baby boomers, I mean, they didn't exist before, they're called builders, but that generation has never done before. These people will have some money in their pocket. They'll certainly be better informed because of social media, because of being online, and because they've spent 40 or 50 years of their career really thinking and exploring the world. So they will be a very, very different. They will want a very different experience than their predecessors. And are we ready for that as well? We also have, of course, the Gen X, the Gen Ys, the Gen Z, all those horrible terms that everybody uses, the pejorative terms to explain the young people.
I never thought as a Gen X I'd feel old, but there are days I feel old when I speak to someone who's a Gen Y, but yeah, go on.
Wait till you're a baby boomer.
Anyway.
So the reality is that each of those travels in a very distinct, very different way. And again, tourism providers often are not understanding of what their particular needs are. That doesn't mean they need to be across the board, but you need to figure out who are, basic marketing, who is coming to you, what do they want from you, and how do they want it. And today's, it's very much more than just a physical offering. It really is around that digital experience as well.
Yeah. Keeping tabs on the future, even though it's changing by the second. Maurice Misolowski, thank you very much. Business Futurist, enjoy your time on the coast.
A pleasure, thank you.
I hope it's everything you want and more.